Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, fellow poets, and welcome to Exploring a Crisis with Captain B2 and Dan DeShino, I hope. Dan has not been feeling well these last few weeks. The fates have not been kind to him. He's come down with some kind of galloping crud, which has affected his voice. I don't know if he's out there right now. Are you out there, Dan? Met by silence.
Nope.
Okay. Oh, Dan, you sound just like Pam.
I know. Isn't it amazing? I've been practicing my Pam voice all day long.
That is so
amazing. Hey, Bobby, how's it going?
I'm doing splendidly. Thank you for that. And I wanted to treat our listeners to one of my favorite pieces of music. It's very short. But it's a Debussy, and I thought with all the prompts being mostly all ladies this evening, the girl with the flaxen hair, I thought would be a nice intro music to a very short, plus the fact that you can't go wrong by listening to Joshua Bell. So
absolutely, that was...
Yeah,
gorgeous
music.
Not a well-known
piece of music, but certainly I've always been one of my favorites. It's just so lilting and beautiful. So I just thought I'd share that with the audience. How are you doing, my dear?
I am doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you, maybe some other cool poets, and just delving into and discussing the poetry. Always something I look forward to.
Yeah, I'm 150% better than I was last show. Last show, I felt like I was a bubble shy of plum. You know, they just weren't lining up properly. So, but, a few weeks sleep and, you know, some good homemade food and that'll just put you to rights. So I made lamb stew the other night, which I'm thoroughly enjoying. So, all righty, let's see. We surprisingly enough, we don't have very many carryovers. So we only have three, and one of them has a a SoundCloud. So There we go. I got the rights.
All right. Well, before Bobby, yes. Before we continue yes. on with the rights,
yes,
I would like to welcome area code 909 to the show. Who are we speaking to, please?
It's Sucker.
Hey, Sucker. Welcome, Sucker for the Sucker for the treadmill.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yep.
Well, it's a pleasure to
welcome.
Be
welcome. Glad you could join
guys.
Us.
This
I'm
is
excited
exciting.
About tonight.
Oh, wonderful.
Lovely. Lovely. Thank you so much. It's always nice to, and to have a male voice, a little testosterone in the crowd never hurts. You know, that's always
I only
nice.
Have a, I only have a little testosterone, but I'll put it to use tonight if I have to.
Your testosterone and I together ought to do fine.
So good that I look.
All righty. Good enough. Okay. How would you like, me to post? I think that would work best.
If that's what you would like to do, go for it.
Yes, I think so. I'm so used to Dan. We had a battle rhythm, and you know what? When you lose your partner to whatever kind of crud, you know, the plague of the 21st century is going around, it tends to throw you off. So here I am. landing on my feet, hopefully, and there we go, and I'm going to post the first one, and the winning number is, okay, and this is the contest that we had 2 weeks ago. We have three carryovers. This was the contest that was, let me go back to this a moment, this was the bookish satire of Pavel Kuczynski that everyone has to And we have three of those that we have to dispatch this evening before we can get to the news. So let us move along as John F. Kennedy would say, we shall go forth with great vigor. We've got an echo on the line too. So Pam, would you like to kick things off with reading this Duncan?
Everyone's still there?
Oh no. Well, have you got?
This is a little laggy tonight.
have you got the?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I was reading the poem on mute, and I apologize for that.
Oh, got it.
All right, let me start over again. Okay, let me start over. And all right, so this is The Sunken Ship by W.P. McLeod One. The bookmark sinks into the page like a deep sea diver. Treasure ships waver in underwater shoals inspected by fish eyes and octopus tentacles in the dark blue of the Atlantic coastal water, shimmering as slippered feet land on rotted wood, and the array of jewels and gold doubloons splash overboard into the white sand. End poem.
A good read.
Lovely read. Very nice read. And let's start with our guest's comments. What did you think of this?
You're talking to me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry. Is it only the three of us?
Well, for now.
Okay.
I have hopes, so. So please,
like
go ahead.
It reminds me kind of what it's like to like be appreciated for diving into poetry. As humans, we don't really know what we have like misconceptions about what treasure is, but there's certain people who kind of dive in and look like, what do you call them, speakers, I guess, kind of dive in and look for something, at least. And then the language in the center of the stanza kind of points to that. Like, eyes and octopus tentacles in the dark blue, and that's a really cool line.
It is. It is.
Yeah, it's super fascinating.
Great.
I don't really know. This is kind of like pairing wine with food. Like, it can really be all bullshit, or you can be smart enough to find a thread to talk about. I'm kind of trying to reconcile that right now.
It's all on what you see in it. And it sounds like you've heard it. Pam, what did you think of this little brevity?
I like this. You know, I always admire when people can almost like tell a story and create what I would call an epic write within a brevity. I really like the imagery in this one, how he brings us right into that moment of being that deep sea diver, coming out of the water, going towards the shore, you know, and he really just captures all of that with the attention to detail, especially with treasure ships waver in underwater shoals inspected by fish eyes and octopus tentacles in the dark blue of the Atlantic coastal water shimmering. I mean, because he could have put just, you know, ocean or sea, but he put Atlantic coastal water. So you're brought very much to a specific region, yes, and a specific type of water. And I thought that was really cool. Great attention to detail.
Yes, I
agree.
That's
a great comment, Pam. It really brought me to, like, the conclusion that, like, an extension of what I misread about the poem.
I don't think there's anything, that there's no wrong or right way. It's just whatever you, that's the wonderful thing about poetry is it, while it's written through someone's filter of life experiences, it's read through your filter of life experiences. And very often, sometimes I've had people see things in my poetry that I didn't see myself. And that's a really neat thing about it. Another pair of eyes visioned on the universe. That's what makes it so fascinating. I also like the same thing, the attention to detail and the description. I mean, with dark blue of the Atlantic waters, I mean, it brings a vision into with the array of jewels and double gold doubloons splash overboard in white sand. Wonderful visual imagery for such a brevity. Great storytelling. So let me go back to our page here and pick up our, I think our next one has SoundCloud, if I'm not mistaken. That would be, David's Dance Harp by Eric Svensson. And let me grab that.
Yes. Well, yeah. Before I play the SoundCloud, just a friendly reminder, Sucker, you're getting a lot of feedback, which tells me that you either, that perhaps you are playing the show on another device while the phone,
oh,
you're on the phone,
to,
and
I'm
that's how you
feedback?
I'm calling
on my phone and reading on the internet.
Okay, so you don't have to, okay. Well, for whatever reason, there's a lot of feedback, so let's all make sure, please, that if it's not our turn to read or comment, that we use the mute button. And that way we can
sure.
cut back on that kind of disruption. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Of course. Yeah. I'll mute it.
All right.
I'll mute it during the reads unless I'm commenting.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. And so we have David's Happenstance Harp by Eric Svensson. And I'll go ahead and push play. Here we go.
David's happenstance harp. Oh, harp me, pages of sages, strum my DNA strings to sing, bring higher heavenly frequencies home. Corporeal concerns laid aside, word for word, page. Fingers feel texture, drinks in timeless ink, steeped in wisdom. Markers upon my book of life, oh harp me, maestro melodies, blessed assurance, assonance. My Grecian cold bookworm head presented on a silver platter. Oh, Salome, slay me not before I soliloquy, or Delilah dances me into precognition. Comic strip dissonance dances darkness. Saul hauls so many fright nights. Skull and crossburn Jolly Rogers. Polluted, convoluted seven seas convulse. Corporeal concerns laid aside, irregular pulse. Spirit guide, fingers to play and ply, book harps. Before sans teeth, sans eyes set in, read some more. Explore linear labyrinths, ageless ink seeped into pages, activates vertical axis. Steeped in blessed assurance assonance, each page a touch stone tambourine. Feel the pulse reverberate. Harp hands strum coded DNA potential. Curiosity never killed the cat. Verbosity of verbs energize. Adjectives ad hoc. Heard nouns to black flag a common cause. Sure afterglow illumes. Spirit hums with Nabucco's slave chorus. Celebrates the greatest wealth ever amassed. Between and betwixt your own book of life, guardian angel books appear as by higher heavenly decree. Davids that strum DNA harps when most needed. Lovers embrace touch of well-worn bookends. Milestones marking many a pilgrim's progress. Ace of base, longitude and latitude space. So much more to harp on before our epilogues are writ. End poem.
He had far too much fun with this. he had far too much fun with his wordplay in this. Oh my goodness gracious. There are some absolutely brilliant passages in here. Harp hands, strum coded DNA potential. I was looking for the one that really tickled me so much. I'm trying to, now I've lost it. Isn't that the way that you hear something and you think, oh my God, oh God, curiosity never killed the cat. Adjectives ad hoc, heard nouns to black flag a common cause. I can't find it, doggone it. But it just, he so tickled me with this one. He really had a lot of fun. Comic strip dissonance dances darkness. He has got some great alliteration in here, some assonance, some great metaphors and word paintings, and he has just outdone himself in this one. What did you think, Pam?
You know what? I have to agree with you. I thoroughly enjoyed this one. As you said, it's great wordplay, wonderful use of alliteration and imagery. As always, he does superb reading on his SoundCloud. To me, the main theme idea that I get from this is that it's about learning from life and getting the most out of it. And I did really like, too, that part that mentions curiosity never killed the cat. You know, I like the contradiction there, the idea of, you know what, don't hold back. Be curious. Be willing to learn. I also like the different biblical references as metaphors. And, you know, my Grecian curled bookworm head presented on a silver platter. Oh, Salome, slay me, not before I soliloquy or Delilah dances me into precognition. You know, I really like that idea of before you take away my head, let me have my say. Let me speak as I am meant to speak. So excellent write and very well done.
There's so many passages in here that are just such absolute gems. Guardian angels, guardian angel books appear as by higher heavenly decree, and the subtle reference to the Jewish king, Nabucco's slave chorus. I mean, he's assembled this so masterfully. Senator, what did you think of this?
It's really moving for me. I love that this is the excessive show. Did I say that correctly? And that he sardonically tied in literary devices with little hopeful messages. Because it's really weird to try and write intelligently. Like, you have to try and figure out if you're smart enough to do it. You have to read a bunch. You have to listen to other people. You have to talk to other people. You have to read poetry.
Oh, my, yes.
And I love the little cue on curiosity never killed the cat. I feel like I'm not smart enough to talk about this poem. It's really confusing.
You know, but that's the beauty of this. Again, we all learn things. I mean, often I don't think there's a show goes by that one of us doesn't go, "What is that?" and the rest of us. Oh my goodness! Oh, then we all learn something, and that's the wonderful thing about it. I mean, he's just, and he is such an agile writer. With some,
yeah,
oh,
he
Delilah,
really is. That's incredible.
Because, you know, he's that's our Eric, and his readings are always so delightful. So, well, thank you for a great.
It's this weird, like, authoritative monotone that is just so comforting.
It's just his style. It's his style.
It's beautiful,
yeah.
Really. I really love it. I love the line adjective ad hoc.
It's a very narrative style. It's
mm-hmm.
different from who is it? Titus Llewellyn, who has a very lyrical style. And then we have you'll hear later on in the show Starlina has a SoundCloud. And then also Ophesiana, and everyone reads their pieces differently, which is just wonderful. You get the thoughts of the author, and you get the different varieties of interpretations. So,
that's what I like about this is that it's just so accepting and explanatory about all the spaces that communicating your world or writing about your world can be.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and now we've dispatched the previous contest, and make sure that I've got, let me close this so I don't confuse myself, which is on times far too easy to do. Okay, and why have I got, what is this? Tell me, why have I got a wallpaper of Santa Claus up? I don't know where this came from. Okay, let's go to, now we have, now here's the contest that we have for this week. The American Gothic of Andrea Couch. I love the way she heard the last name spelling. I had to look at it several times to make sure I was pronouncing it correctly. And it's almost like it's a fun spelling. It's almost like if you look at it like G H O T I phonetically spells fish. So you look at K-O-W-C-H, it's couch. Okay. it's interesting. And her artwork is just so cleanly defined with such wonderful attention to detail in it. I found the details that she has in the background, I just thought were just a marvelous inspiration for our writers. And apparently enough of us agreed with me that we've got a very interesting crop of poetry tonight. So let's begin with Aphasiana, which is a SoundCloud. Our first one hits a SoundCloud, bless her heart. And let me grab that and post it. On the inbox, and there we are. There we go.
All right. I don't see it. Did you post in the right place? Let me refresh again. Oh, there it is. Okay. All right. Bye. So we have Farming Fear by Aphasiana, and I'll go ahead and push play.
Thank you.
Among fungi, I grow. From shit-drenched circumstance observed by curious crow, giving resurrection a chance. My body sprawled askew, knees bent on nature's pew. When I have darkened day's last corner, I gather flies as fiery as my ideals. Bioluminescent illusions of warmer, chasing time and all its seals. I see clearest without noon's glare. Only midnight takes my dare. Burn the bales of my efforts, carefully shaped productivity. Incinerate art so attention averts. Avoid embarrassment of lacking ability. Guided by insecurity's seduction, intoxicated by the fumes of self-destruction. Slumber sets fire to the carriage, meant to carry hope. Barren land to forage, once a mirage to cope. Crushed by runaway dreams, fading like the yellowing greens. Storm-stained sky, an eggnog hue, I stand with a murder that crows, caw, in chorus, as if on cue. Accompanied by wind's murmur, their feathers are slivers of night, yesterday and tomorrow's fright.
What a wonderful reading. What a wonderful reading. So, Tucker, would you like to kick the comments off on Aphasiana's piece?
I'll do my best. I really like this poem. I think it's like an inspirational message to people. Like a little chit chat about growing up. Little motivational speech about writing. It's a little dark. It's a little sardonic about the kind of stuff you think about when you're trying to learn what and how to say things. It's got that, like, Bukowski's belly ache, you know, like, you can only write when you're fucking down and out.
Was there any part of it?
I think it's about, like the stanza, burn the bales of my efforts, carefully shaped productivity. It's like when you're, like, I don't know if you guys go through this, but when I write, it's usually like when I'm in a,
got awfully quiet. Is everyone there?
You may have dropped.
Are you there, Bobby? No, you're there. Okay. Okay, so am I. I guess Tucker must have dropped.
It must have dropped. Well, while he's finding his way back to us, what did you think of the Faziana's piece?
I really like this. First of all, I like when people can be inspired by more than one prompt and put a cohesive write together. You know, and she's done that. She's done that. This has powerful imagery throughout. That was an amazing read. I especially was very entertained and impressed when she brought out the caws of the crows. Not just said the word, but actually cawed. I really like how this spoke to me on the idea of a spirit crushed by insecurities, and yet the whole idea of growing into oneself. And it's difficult to pick out a favorite part because it's wonderful all the way through, but I did really like the use of the phrase bioluminescent illusion. And slumber set fire to the carriage meant to carry hope, barren land to forge, once a mirage to cope, crushed by runaway dreams, fading like the yellowing green. You can see so much of that idea of the hope fading away. Excellent write and very well done.
I agree. And the fact that she's drawn her inspiration from several images. I'm like you. When a writer does something like that, I really enjoy that and blending them from the same artist. I gather flies as fiery as my ideals. Bioluminescent illusion of warmer, chasing time and all its steals. That's a great, great line. The chasing time and all its steals. I see clearest without noon's glare, only midnight takes my dare. And she's got some wonderful passages in here. Avoid embarrassment of lacking ability, guided by insecurity, seduction, intoxicated by the fumes of self-destruction. Great wordplay, great alliteration. And I especially like the last stanza, where she draws from the photo from the image, storm stains sky and eggnog hue, and she nailed it. When I read eggnog, I went, wow, perfect. And I stand with a murder, and actually for those people who have some strange preoccupation with units of measure, people like me. Actually, a flock of crows is known as a murder of crows. That's the unit. Like a pod of whales, a group of crows is called a murder of crows. So that wordplay there was perfect. The crows call in chorus as if on cue, accompanied by wind's murmur. Their feathers are slivers of night. Wow. Just a superb write. And to hear her, I hear it delivered in her voice. It just makes it special. So great job, Faziana. Thank you for that wonderful piece that you sent to us. So, okay, let's go. Oh, okay, we've got, since I haven't read in a while, let me grab Amy Mundell's. Well, every time I try and grab these things, they it's like they duck out of the way. Okay, here we go. All right, and we have I just want to recognize on the in the background we have Stelina on the board with us, and looks like Phil's out there and Amy's out there too. So, folks, thank you for being with us out on the board. We appreciate your sitting out there. And and Sucker for the Treadmill is trying to get into us, and he's having trouble, but he's still trying. So, okay, we have the next piece is called Murmurations by Amy Mundell. I feel a murmuration deep within my bones, whipped up with the wind of me and stretched to overflow. It rakes across my garments, hangs above my neck, pulling at the ends of my hair, which flies about unchecked. Fingered mists roll at my feet like clouds brought down to earth, lifting up with wind and birds to coast on silent surf. The waves of air crash around me, flapped about on wings, gliding through the flesh of me to swarm as my heart sings. I stand there lost within it all, the cries and howls and screams, silent as the waves they crawl in woods of long-lost dreams. Feathered wants and plumage hopes fly freely from that cage, dancing through the air again, released from forest's age, verdant shackles broken wide by winter's freezing tracks, the darkened trees sent out their mist to bring their prisoners back. They swoop and dive, ghostly breath, which fails to grasp their lives. And so those plans from long ago nest back into my mind. End poem. And that was written to prompt 36, which, pulling up the test, let's see which one that is. I really enjoyed the artwork on this artist. The attention to detail on this was just marvelous. Let's see, 36. Here we go. Oh, okay, yes. This was the one with the young lady. She's standing in the wintertime. She's standing in a snowdrift, and you see a flock of birds that are just sweeping in behind her, and the bare naked trees in the back, and her coat is being whipped up around by the wind, and her scarf is being tossed around, and the ends of her hair also, which is a very coppery red. So beautiful, beautiful descriptors that she's drawn as inspiration from this piece. What did you think of it, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. This is beautiful. First of all, wonderful rhyme and flow, beautiful imagery.
Yes.
I love the word murmuration. There's something about the M and repetitive M and R sound that just is very comforting. I like how, to me, this speaks on the idea of the power of the storm, especially when you live in the flatland areas where tornadoes are very prevalent, and you know the power of the storm, and you know the power of nature and the way that it destroys life, and yet, you know, you carry on through it. And I like how this is almost as a metaphor that for that storm within the mind. I really like the waves of air crash around me, flapped about on wings, gliding through the flesh of me to swarm as my heart sings. I stand there lost within it all, the cries and howls and screams, silent as the waves they crawl in woods of long-lost dreams. There's something about acknowledging, standing, even if you're indoors and you're not like in the middle of a storm, like you're indoors watching a storm, you're suddenly very aware of how fragile your humanity is. So excellent write and very well done.
I am, and I was being brilliant too, damn it. You're absolutely right, especially when you hear the storm affecting the structure. You hear joists and 2x4s creaking in the house. You hear the building itself shifting in the violence of the storm. That is just something that I've always found amazing, and it's like the structure is speaking to you. And it's just, she's captured it all. That's a great ride. I really enjoyed it. Very nice. All right, and I think I've gone ahead and posted the next one. That would be Fire Coming Into Myself. Oh, Fire by Coming Into Myself. Excuse me. Would you read that, please?
Yes, absolutely. All right. This is Fire by Coming Into Myself. Crackling, crackling, crashing, embers fly treetop to treetop. The road and alley of flames flee what cannot be fled. A different environment, crackling yellow and orange, flames rise skyward above the hay rolls. Moon above raptors, circles stalking prey, fleeing the heat. Nowhere to go on this limitless prairie. You are not wetting quilts to slap at the flames. You stand alone back to the growing conflagration, face reflecting, no fear, stolid, hair a mane floating on the hot air. No one to come to your aid. You stand unmoved, a gothic figure dropped into a burning frontier. End poem.
Excellent read. I'm pulling up the figure, and it's actually one of the illustrations that Faziana referenced, which were the burning hay bales. This was the prompt for this particular piece, which I like the simple title, Fire. But you read it. Is it too soon to ask you what you thought of it?
Not at all. I'd be happy. I thought it was a wonderful write. I like how they chose to write it like only one to two or three words per line.
Yes.
And so it had that very narrow, very short, impactful line. I really thought this had powerful imagery, great use of some subtle alliteration. It was an excellent write on the idea to me of finding strength in facing adversity alone. And there was also a sadness to it. Like, you saw the strength of this woman, but you also saw the sadness of her losing her house and the helplessness, you know, of not being able to do anything except for just let nature, let the flame run its course. I liked the particularly the last stanza, starting with, you are not wetting quilts to slap at the flames, you stand alone, back to the glowing conflagration, face reflecting, no fear. Amazing lines and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I was also struck by the last stanza. I like the way she built to it too. Like you said, very focused, crackling, crashing. You know, very short lines. Keeps you very focused on the action. An alley of flames flee what cannot be fled. And then it gets a little bit longer. We get flames rise high above the hay rolls, and you are not wetting quilts to slap at the flames. You stand alone, back to the growing conflagration, face reflecting no fear. Stolid hair and mane floating on the hot air. The visual imagery, the storytelling in this is just superb. It's just a really terrific description of the details in that particular imagery. So coming into myself, you did a great job on this. Thank you for sharing this with us. So, okay, let me go back to, guess what? We have Selena coming up at a SoundCloud.
Yay! All right, very cool.
Yeah, let's do that Selena SoundCloud thing.
Yeah, well, just to let you know, Bobby, when you get a chance, I did send you a message for you to take a look at.
Yes, ma'am. I will look at it right now.
All right. So we have More to Life by Selena, and I'll go ahead and push play for that.
My gosh, that was gorgeous. I tell you, Selena, I don't know, every time she shares something with us, it's like it's even better than the last piece. I don't know how she manages to do that. That was a gorgeous, gorgeous read. I like, Frank made a comment, it's better than the BBC. I'm with you there, Frank. Her elocution and her inflections are just gorgeous, and it's her writing, and it doesn't get much better than that. So I really enjoy this piece very much. Pam, why don't you give us your opinion of this piece?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful. She did a wonderful read on the SoundCloud. This is a great take on the chosen prompt. I love her imagery and metaphors. It's a beautiful, heartfelt write that, to me, that spoke on feeling trapped in the monotony of life and craving so much more. And what I like is that you get taken through this woman's journey, and at the end, how she comes to realize that she deserves so much more than she thought she did. Once this was my world, the only one I thought I deserved, yet now I realize there must be more to life than this, much more than baking bread and lying back insensate, where adventures await in the wings to embrace my eager kiss. You really see the spirit of this woman just shining through the despair and the heavy burden of the everyday. So excellent write and very well done.
Oh my goodness! Yes, she has taken the expression in the woman's face and the activity. She's making bread, but you can see that she's not in the moment. She's not in what she's doing. She's going through the motions. Her mind, her spirit are far away somewhere else, and Stelina has just captured that reverie, that melancholy, even though that there's children in the background, there's a cat in the background, not there. She is someplace else, dreaming of a different existence, while she's trapped in her everyday life. So you're right, it's just beautifully done, terrific piece. And let's get this piece that you had pointed out to me. Thank you for doing that, by the way. I appreciate it. You keep me on my toes. I get lost in details sometimes.
Oh, no problem.
Grab that, and we'll put that out there. I've lost my inbox. There it is. I hate it when that happens. Okay. Let me put that there. And then we have Alone in Nature by Jenny Hunt, 2017, and I'll go ahead and give that a read. Alone in the meadow, I feel no pain, no fear, no love. My heart is filled with anguish, lying here, surrounded by beauty, yet can't see it. Birds and butterflies landing, but can't feel them. Nature's thorns are cutting me open, feeling the pain and bleeding out. Nothing can save me now, burning in the distance, destroying everything in its path. As I lay here dying, forgotten about, no one comes to save me. Alone I die on this hill, knowing my life was nothing, nothing but a wasted dream. End poem. My goodness, so sorrowful. She did it. She says it's a mix of prompts 14, 33, and 36, and easily done with this artist. There are some reoccurring motifs in these that make it capable. Here's again. You got the prompt 14 is a woman lying in the field, and there's the coach burning in the background. That's 14, and 33 is the is one of the ones I believe that Faziana used with the woman standing in the amber or a very rust-colored field with all the birds flying around her, and that's 33 and 36. 36 is the one with the young woman with the red hair and the coat and the coat flying around and the birds behind her. So this is a really very sad, mournful piece. It's just very, very touching, very melancholy. What do you think of this, Pam?
Yeah, this is beautiful. I'll have to check out more of Jenny's writing. I hope she finds herself inspired to write for more of our shows because I would like to read more of her. There is definitely a strong emotional impact to this, right? Wonderful imagery. I like how she kind of throws us off a little bit in that first, like, half a line. Alone in the meadow, I feel no pain, no fear, and then it changes, nor love. And it almost makes you think of the whole idea of, like, when you're taking an antidepressant and it can, you know, numb things to where you don't feel anything. I like how this basically, to me, is a question I think we've all asked ourselves. You know, that whole idea of the extended metaphor of I went and laid down in a field and died. How long would it take people to actually notice or care? You know, and I think that's what the young woman here in this poem, in this picture is doing, in this artwork is doing. She's laying down and thinking, nobody cares. Nobody's going to search for me. I really like the imagery all the way through, but especially nature's thorns are cutting me open, feeling the pain and bleeding out. Nothing can save me now. It's like in that moment of death, she's suddenly feeling for the first time. Excellent, yeah. Right, and very well done.
Gorgeous. And guess who I have up for you to read? Our very own Betty Page.
Oh, awesome. I do love Betty.
I had a feeling. That's why I plucked that one out just for you.
Oh, thank you. All right. Haunted Seashores by Betty Page. Vivid blue waves crash, melodically rolls seafoam. Ocean's gems tumble. Clear aquas sparkle, shimmering rainbow starlight, magical mystics. Cinnamon wild hair, cascading, blowing in winds, piercing emerald eyes. Fierce, free spirits roam, darkness ascends visibly, crimson butterflies, wolves as spirit guides. Jet black howling screams ascend, awakens ravens. Snowy owls glide, perched upon stone castle walls and meadows. Tea party seaside, antique porcelain dolls haunting our islands. Translucent raindrops, flows, cascades, pretty doll's eyes, drips from cherry lips. Heads twirl full circle at midnight screams through forest, faces seen in trees. Each doll dressed in white Victorian children's clothes, all tattered and torn. Tall pine trees looming beneath wild mushrooms blooming, caressing bright flowers, dark shadows creeping, crawls up voluptuous flesh, penetrates deeply as she lay sleeping beneath deep sapphire blue, wolf packs howl round prize. End poem.
Beautifully read. This is really interesting. This is where I really admire Betty Page. She has the prompt she selected was prompt number 28, which is an image of a young woman. She's got the ocean in behind her. She's got the ginger hair, as so many of the figures seem to have. She's got a ginger-colored dog with her. She looks like she's giving the dog water, but she's got the very turbulent ocean behind her with a very dark sky, and the visual imagery, the story that she has painted to go with this. Heads twirl at midnight screams through the forest. Each doll dressed in white Victorian children's clothes, all tattered and torn, tall pine trees looming. She sees all of this. She's drawn all this from this one figure. And I think that is what a wonderfully a creative imagination. As she starts with the ocean and just expands from there. And again, with her very very succinct tight format, as she lays sleeping beneath deep sapphire blue, wolf packs howl round prize. Wow, what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, it does have stunning imagery throughout. It definitely got deliciously dark and creepy with some of the imagery, especially heads twirl full circle at midnight screams through forest, faces seen in trees, each doll dressed in white Victorian children's clothes, all tattered and torn. I mean, it was like they just walked into the middle of a horror movie or something. You know, it just, yeah, the wonderful, wonderful dark imagery. I like how she tells the story in the 575 lines, as you were mentioning, and just beautifully written and very well done.
Well,
uh-oh. Well, I see Bobby has dropped, so we'll wait for her to call back. So, yeah, great writing there. And, you know, great writing there, Betty. Always enjoy your imagery. And your ability to tell a spooky story. And welcome back, Bobby. Glad you could return.
Yes. I caught that one on the rebound. I don't know what happened there. All of a sudden it was like, goodbye. Thank you. Okay.
Oops.
Gremlins with a sense of humor. I hate it when that happens. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, all right. Next we have Kerr. And I'm going to go ahead and read this one here, Her Snowy Presence by Captain Kerr. And again, it's the this particular image seems to be generating a lot of interest. It's the young woman with the coat opening, getting blown open, and the birds in the background. And so Captain Kerr has written something to this, and so let me read it. Winter's grimy, snowy presence excites her. Encircled in gray clouds and gusts of white, the cold feels good against her exposed cheeks, with sparrows taking wing for southern skies. Some fly lower and land beneath her legs, perhaps curious or looking for feed. In rustic barrenness, her red hair blows like a stubborn leaf clinging to a tree. A slanting rock base balances laced boots. Rose petals escape from her pleated dress. Her coat, the last remnant of warming green, tight knits the backwoods to the naked brush. She's in love with Michigan as fall gives way to dark winter night. Towering above the bridge, she grips farmhouse murals, sheltered against the glare of city lights. Daisy wheels and sunflower mills slowly spin into spring and carpet-aproned fields. Braids of brown, braids of red, a softened crown, weave roots beneath the gleaming harvest sun. And what lives full dies hard out on the wall. She has white lace, she is riven, she sees harsh shadows growing long. She is starlight, she is vision. The end rhymes to a song. End poem. Very romantic. Great storytelling. Great backstory. Pam, what did you think of this piece?
This is beautiful. I love the flow of the phrasing, and the imagery is great. I like how it speaks to me on the idea of a woman who feels connected to the land through all the trials. I've never been to Michigan myself, but I have friends who have been, and I hear their winters can be even rougher than Wisconsin winters. Absolutely. Well, I have one friend who, her and her husband, decided to buy a cabin in Michigan, because, you know, a small cabin, because they just go there all the time. It's like her favorite place to visit. And I did like that he said Michigan, because that's where the artist is from. So it was like giving a nod to the artist. She is in love with Michigan as fall gives way to dark winter night, towering above the ridge. She grips farmhouse murals, sheltered against the glare of city light. And I like how this poem speaks on the idea of a woman who feels as if she's found where she belongs. So excellent write and very well done.
I agree that that attention to detail, that nod to the home state of the artist was a nice detail. And absolutely right. I'm from Illinois, and so within spitting distance, a rock throwing distance of Michigan. I've been up there a number of times, and one of my best friends, one of my Marine Corps buddies, best friend in the whole world, she lived in the Lower Peninsula, I believe. Because if you look at Michigan, it's divided by the lake, and you have what they call the Upper Peninsula and the Lower Peninsula. And it's so close to it, – it's right up there against Canada, and the winters are extremely harsh. But for the people that live up there, like in those areas like Wisconsin and Minnesota and Michigan, you find people that have migrated, immigrated from the Scandinavian areas in Europe, Norway, Sweden, and a lot, basically a large, huge Norwegian conclave in Minnesota, but they are very harsh winters. And he has described it just beautifully, and the attention to detail and the storytelling is beautifully done. And I like the way he brings it through the winter, though, and ends it with something actually a little bit warmer than is suggested of the picture. But he's gone through prompt 6 and 16, and what's the last one? Shoot, 6, 16, and 36. So it's a 6 is the again with the coat, I believe. I'm scrolling back. Whoops, gone. No, 6 is the fireflies. All right, how lovely. The fireflies, 16, I believe, is the coat. 6 or 36 is the coat. 36 is the coat, and 16 is. We're scrolling, and we stop. All right. Interesting. She's got a young woman, center page. She's got a sunflowers behind her, and a windmill way in the back. And she has a very, very wistful look on her face. Again, like the one in the other poem that was written, she is not in the moment. She's physically she's there, but her mind is somewhere else. And I've noticed that quite a few of them have that they have that wistful, faraway look in their eye. They're very interesting. So interesting combination of those three. I really like how our poets. Take these different elements, like you said, and weave them together. So it's very, very clever. It's okay. Let's see. Let me grab the next one. And would you like to give us a read of Sister Solitude by Guilty?
I would be happy to.
Thank you.
All right. Sister Solitude by Guilty. Sister Solitude, do your dreams elude you? A field of sunflowers spring up at your feet. Still you look at the horizon you can never reach. Sister Solitude, are you lonely looking around all of America in front of you, but no one can hear your sound? Timid heart beating, drums of dissatisfaction. Set the world afire, there would be no reaction. Sister Solitude, lying in quiet despair, there is no one looking after you. No one really cares. End poem.
Lovely read. And strangely enough, it is inspired by that same image that I just described, with the young woman standing in the field with the sunflowers behind her, and the windmill in the background. And here's another example of how someone has seen something else in this. And I could see what they're referring to. The Sister Solitude, I love that, the title, because it really is very, very descriptive of the look on her face. Your dreams elude you, a field of sunflowers spring up your feet, still you look at the horizon you can never reach. And that is just so, the futility in that just is so, it's almost palpable. And this is a wonderful brevity, beautifully done. I don't know that we've gotten much of this. Is like the other one that you that we read. This isn't. I think it's another new writer. We've got a couple of new writers in there, which is really nice. What did you think of this piece?
Yeah, I'm glad that Guilty wrote for your show. I always enjoy his writing. I know he's recently been writing quite a bit for the After Midnight contest that I run, and so it's good to see that here. And first of all, I love that repetitive line, the beginning of each stanza, Sister Solitude. I felt like it gave the right, besides that and the subtle rhyme that, you know, wasn't forced in, it had a wonderful lyrical quality. Like, I could see this, I don't honestly know what his reading voice sounds like, but I could hear this being read on a SoundCloud with a very, like, melancholy type music gently playing in the background. And I like how he writes about a woman who feels so alone, feels like she has no one to speak to. And I really like it all the way through, but especially Sister Solitude, are you lonely looking around all of America in front of you, but no one can hear your sound? You know, just a wonderful write on the whole idea of realizing how truly big the world is and how small you feel in it. So excellent write and very well done.
Yes. Agreed. And when I say new writers, I don't necessarily mean new to AP. Like you said, you have some of these folks tend to have their favorite contest hosts. Like I like writing for Lynn Gauthier, if you have folks that like your contests, and this one is new to our contests. The other one,
and that's awesome.
Yeah, and the other writer, actually, she is a new writer. She, you know, I looked at her page, she's at 36 pieces, and that's it. So I'm glad to see her in. That was the young lady that you sent me the cue on, and I'm glad to see her writing to our poetry or our contest. It's great, and it's I get excited when I see new faces and new names in there. Okay, speaking of new, let's go to the next piece. And that would be The Three Graces by Keith Palthorpe. And I will pull that up, The Three Graces. And that one's pretty, I like it when the poet attaches the prompt. It does tend to lend something to it. So we have the three young ladies dancing with the dogs in the field. And we have the three graces. In a world of chaos, some things endure. Their dance, as old as time, is not subject to the elements. To give and receive and return, these icons are timeless and ageless. As with hospitality, they transcend cultures and dwell in a vault of values immutable and divine. It is an open question whether the fates can venture there. These are mankind's sacred treasure. We violate these values at the cost of our soul. End poem. Wow. And there's an interesting the comment in the author's note. This is 35. It says, the reference is to Grant Wood is certainly well taken. Her work is haunting, disturbing, and comforting at once. Clearly American. Nicely said. What did you think of this piece, this brevity, Pam?
I have to say, I think this is honestly one of my favorites by Keith Palethorpe. You know, I really like how he saw the three graces within these dancing women in this artwork. And so right away from the title, he grabs my attention. And, you know, I like how this speaks on the idea of, you know, that it's very philosophical in its questioning of how much of our life do we actually control? Do we have 100% free will, you know, or are there higher powers? Are there fates out there controlling? No matter what decision we make, we will eventually end up want us to end up. And I really like this all the way through, but especially they transcend cultures and dwell in a vault of values immutable and divine. It is an open question whether faith can venture there. These are mankind's sacred treasures. You know, and I like that, the idea that the sacred treasures are mankind throughout cultures are the values that we hold dear. So excellent write, yeah. And very well done.
I agree. I it is deeply philosophical and amazingly complex for such a brief piece. And that there is a real a gift, I tell you, to be able to condense that kind of complexity into just a few lines. And speaking of complexity, guess who we have up next? We have, let me grab him. And we have Scott. We have Scott out here. Paste. There we go. We have Through the Window by Scott Sharp. And all of a sudden, I've gotten amnesia. Did I read or did you read?
Yes. Yes. You read the last one.
Would you read this one, please?
I would be happy to. All right, here we go. Through the Window by Scott Sharp. There is a lonely window I look through, one where the sun sets into a dark sky, cold, bare limbs stretch, touching, brisk, cold air hiding nothing, not even the loneliness of this cold winter, where the white wolf sneaks up into my dreams as I look deep inside for the strength to pull the shade down. End poem.
Climactic in its ending. That was, wow, where the white wolf. I like what he's done here. The storytelling and the metaphors. The white wolf sneaks up into my dreams as I look deep inside for the strength to pull the shades down. Wow. This is terrific. I think it's one of the best things he's written. I really, really like this one. What did you think, Pam?
Yeah, I have to agree. This is just a beautiful and powerful write. To me, you know, the imagery and the metaphors speak strongly on the seasonal depression, when the winter and the lack of light really hits you. I like this all the way through it because it's hard to separate the parts, but I'm particularly drawn to touching brisk cold air, hiding nothing, not even the loneliness of this cold winter, where the white wolf sneaks up into my dreams. It's like the white wolf represents winter and the winter of the spirit, and you can't escape it even in when you fall asleep. It's just constantly there, you know, reminding you of its presence. So excellent write and very well done.
Well said. Well said. It's almost like a permafrost. Well said. I like that. Okay, so we have next, we have the Caged Bird Sisters. Okay, and let me open that one up and close a couple things, lest I confuse myself, which is far too easy in sometimes. Okay, Oh, I remember this prompt. This is, we've got, this is a very, very busy picture. We've got four young ladies here that look like they're having a tea party, and there's a different expression on each one's face, and some of them are in the moment, some of them aren't. There's a dog in the foreground, and there's all kinds of things spread out over the table. So, okay, we have The Caged Bird Sisters by W.P. McLeod, one. The animals dined with the Caged Bird Sisters in pre-industrial Detroit, lapping cream from a waterfall pitcher and noshing nibbled apples and bread crusts from the linen tablecloth on the autumn porch as the girls stare at the painter, some sidelong, some needle straight, asking without speech from manis emission from the quotidian ennui of rural farm life in the city without streetcars, automobiles, electric fans, or skyscrapers, waiting for a stagecoach or saddle-mounted cavalier to ride down the dirt road, outracing the clouds of dust and the onset of violet dusk looming at the horizon. End poem. End sentence. It was one long sentence. I was running out of breath. Manis emission. I got to look that one up. That one just caught me flat-footed. Manis emission is the release from slavery. Wow. See, this is what I was talking about earlier, about learning something every time. Every time. Manis emission. Huh. I'll be darned. So we have asking without speech for Manis emission from the quotidian ennui of rural farm life. What a great phrase. Quotidian ennui of rural farm life in the city without streetcars, automobiles, electric. But it sounds like it is just, it's at the edge of the it's at the edge of civilization, it's the edge of the world where civilization or culture only goes there if it's by accident. My goodness, this is quite the word painting and the description of what's going on in here. And for a brevity, this is really got a lot of action, a lot of activity packed into it. What did you think of it, Pam?
I have to agree with you there. There's definitely a lot of activity packed into it. I really like how with the lines run together, and yet there's a distinction that brings out the distinct character of each of the four women and everything they have going on around them. Again, we have a nice nod to the artist with the mention of Detroit. I like that he brings us into pre-industrial Detroit, a time long forgotten. I particularly like stare at the painter, some sidelong and some needle straight, asking without speech for manumission from the quotidian ennui of the rural farm life in the city without streetcars, automobiles, electric fans, or skyscrapers. It's that idea that we all have something that we long to escape. And I also like how it speaks on the whole idea that oftentimes a photographer, an artist, it is there to simply capture their moment. They're not there to change it. They're not there to interfere with it, but just to capture it as it's meant to be. So excellent write and very well done.
I agree, and you're right. It speaks to, like, it speaks to the issue that everyone has something they want to escape. That was very perceptive. Oh, we have a piece here by a very popular young woman, and I'm hoping she'll read it for us. How about it, Pam? Would you read this, "The Marrow in the Fields" by Rye?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I will be happy to read this, Troublemaker. All right,
thank you.
This is my poem, and it's called "The Marrow in Fields of Rye." black plague whispers riding the wind across fields of grass trampled by apocalyptic horsemen, love lost upon blemished acres of dreams cast aside. The masses are led to a cornerstone of Americana corruption, wooing the marrow in the skulls of martyrs gnawed by rodents. The flames and smoke rising from fields of rye, backs and buffalo hide, petals crushed in skeletal lullabies. The tune of the piper leads the barren woman to the grave of the child, where the cadence of boots tramples the land before a weary eye. End poem.
Great storytelling. I like, you've got some really interesting elements in this. And I like what you've built around this, the prompt that you selected. Black plague whispers riding the wind across fields of grass trampled by apocalyptic horsemen. And there's a darkness, a pervasive darkness. So there's a cornerstone of Americana corruption, wooing the marrow and the skulls of martyrs, gnawed by rodents. That's grim. The flame and smoke rising from fields of rye. This one, the history of bent backs and buffalo hides, petals crushed and skeletal lullabies. I really like that passage. That is, and I don't know if the rhyme was intentional or was just serendipitous, but it's beautifully done. I like the whole thing, the storytelling around this particular image is it feels like it's of the West when it was being conquered and how difficult life was. The tune of the bird leads the barren woman to the grave of the child, where the cadence of boots tramples the land before a weary eye. It just it definitely is not a romanticized version of the movement west and the expansion of the nation. It actually has a very realistic ring to it. So beautifully done, Pam. Very nice. Thank you for sharing this with us.
Well, thank you for the inspiration, and I'm glad you picked up that it was not supposed to be a romanticized version of the of Americana and of the the expansion of land. So I'm glad you picked up on that. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And you're seeing more and more as although Westerns have fallen out of favor, you see more Westerns being much more gritty and realistic. Although there's one that, unfortunately, I can't seem to procure a copy of it. It's one of my absolute favorites. It's called Westward the Women. Have you ever seen it?
I have not. I'll have to check it out.
It was made in the 50s, I believe. Robert Taylor, who is never hard on the eyes, Robert Taylor plays the male lead. And basically, the story is about this man who has a valley in California that he has populated with farmers and what have you. But these men who have carved a living for themselves out of the California wilderness, they want to start families. And so he goes, Robert Taylor and the other, the gentleman who owns the valley, go to Chicago. And they hold a meeting, and they're looking for, and they bring pictures of all of the men, and they post them up on a board, and they have this whole room full of women, and they said, we are looking for women, for wives for these men, and it's a wagon train that consists mostly of nothing but women going west. And they do not sugarcoat any of it. Brutal. They lose some of it to some of them to Indians, some of them to flash floods. I love it because it really shows the grit and the determination of the women who undertake this journey, this odyssey from Chicago to California in the wagon trains. And there's one of them, even is an Italian woman who has her son with her, and she speaks no English. And there's it's amazing. And she ends up, and wouldn't you know, of course, they wrote it in the script, but if she gets to the other end, and the picture that she, the man, the picture of the man that she picks out is Italian. It's when they finally get there. I'm trying to think who they did. There's the one woman actress, a very large woman. I want to say Marjorie Main, but I think that's wrong. She's kind of like she's a really sturdy little gal. They finally get to the valley, and they stop. And they've lost the guy who owned the valley. He gets killed by Indians. But they stop, and the Robert Taylor, who is the wagon train leader, he says, "What are you doing?" He says, "We're almost there." And the woman says, "You don't understand. We are not going into town looking like this." And because of going across country, they've lost that because they had clothing they brought with them. They brought finery, and they had to abandon it. Very often, they had to abandon things when they were going across the desert. So they said, "We're not going in like this." Said, "You go into town and you find curtains and tablecloths and blankets and anything that we can use to make clothing for ourselves, because we are not going to go in until we wash and we clean ourselves up and we put makeup on and we look presentable." And said, "And you tell the guys in the town that if they try and come out here, we'll shoot the first one we find, or the first one we see." So he drives a buckboard out there, and he goes into town. The guys want to know where the women. And he's looking. He says, they're not coming in. And so they get all these tablecloths and curtains and everything. And the women they bring the buckboard back out. And it looks like a basement sale. I mean, they're picking over it and pulling things. And it's funny. You just see them coming in, and it's really charming, because as the guys are helping them out of the buckboards, so one girl, she's got obviously a tablecloth, and she lifts it up, and she's got trousers underneath, and boots, but she's got this tablecloth, and the women have fixed themselves up with flowers and lace and what have you, and they're standing on the in this like a pavilion, and the one woman who's big, she says, "Look," and they're all looking at each other, and nobody knows what to do first, and she says, "Look," she says, "don't you think that you guys are doing the choosing?" She said, "Before we left, we got all to look at all of these pictures." She says, and I says, "I've been staring for the last several thousand miles. I've been staring at two things: the back end of a mule and this picture. And don't ask me which one looked better." and she picks up, and she's and she walks across the floor, and one guy panics and runs. She says, "Oh, don't worry, it's not you." And she points at this other little tiny guy, and she says, "It's you." And it's so funny that they start pairing off with all the guys that they picked out, and as they're introducing each other, that there's a band that they start playing music, and off to the side there's a preacher. So as they decide they like each other, they go off to the side and they all get married. It's a wonderful, wonderful film, and I can't seem to get a copy of it. But it's one of those things that you see on AMC or one of the classic movie channels. But it's called Westward the Women, and it's really a charming, absolutely charming film. So anyway, enough of that. but it's like if you've seen the new film out, Woman King, very, very positive role models. Very positive role models of what women are capable of, and it's amazing. So okay, now we've got, and because we're going to be we're going to be running out of poetry here in a few minutes. We've got Palm by Fabrice D, and I'm going to go ahead and read this. Is it, oh, my goodness, it looks rather lengthy. Well, this will take up a few minutes. So, okay, and this is based on prompt 38. So we have Palm. Whereas I was botanizing, whole observing, calm and serene, a lanceolate green foliage, ramifying and delicate, half absorbed in my study, half in wanders of poetry, I envisioned a swaying palm, slow, vibrating, serene, and calm. Of his fearsome grace, barely veiling the glare, an angel puts on my desk the flat milk, the soft bread. He makes me, with murmurs, the token of a prayer that speaks to my vision. Quiet, quiet, stay calm. Know the weight of a palm bearing its profusion. For as long as she bends to the plenty of wealth, her figure is complete. Heavy fruits are her links. Behold how she stirs and how, like slow fiber, dividing the moment, splits without mystery the draw of gravity and weight of firmament. Fine mobile arbiter between shadow and sun, mimics from a city, the sleep and the wise around the same square, the wide palms never wear. Out of calls, no farewells. How noble, how delicate, how worthy to expect for nature's only hand. The light gold she whispers sounds to mere air's finger, a silken armor. She loads the desert soul, an undying singing. She returns to sand winds, which wash her with their grains to itself oracle. Flatters from miracles, sorrows sing to themselves. While ignoring herself between sand and heavens, each day that still glimmers, offer honey for her. Her sweetness is measured by divine duration, which does not count the days, but rather well them cloaks, and a juice where collects all the fragrance of love. Sometimes if you despair, if lovable rigor in spite of your cheers operates, only under shades of languor, don't blame for being stingy, a wise one who prepares so much gold authority by the sap all solemn, a timeless hopefulness grows to maturity. These days that seem empty, lost to the universe, have roots quite greedy that are working deserts, disheveled to substances by darkness selected by can never be paused to entrails of the world to chase the deep water that the peaks require. Patience, patience, patience in the azure, patience. Each atom of silence, of a ripe fruit is chance. Will come the happy twist of a dove, of the breeze, sweetest of shaking, a woman who leans in will make this rain falling where we throw on our knees. That a people now falls palm with no chance to fly, in powder that it rolls on the fruits of the sky, you have not lost these days. If so light you remain after these sweet forsakes, all like the one who thinks and whose soul spends themselves to increase from their gifts. Wow. That's one of those pieces that really demands that you read it several times. That is a very complex, very, very layered piece. And I'm looking at the prompt 38 that he's referenced, and it's not one that anyone else has looked at. It's a picture of a young woman, again, ginger haired. She's a dog in the background. She's got it's almost like she's a botanist because she's got floral samples spread across a book and in a jar, and you can see the field blowing in the background, the breeze blowing through the curtains through there. And very, very interesting the way he's interpreted this. What did you think, Pam?
You know, I have to agree. You know, he's always got, I always think that Fabrice D has fascinating writing, amazing imagery and metaphors that are very thought-provoking. I really like how this kind, to me, has a feeling of lost love and found strength. And it's another one where it almost speaks on the idea of the feminine spirit trapped. Of course, that's just after, you know, a first glance. Like you said, it's one of those rites that you have to read multiple times to see what you get from it. I really like the line that repeats patience, 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 patience in the azure. Patience. Each atom of silence of a ripe fruit is chance. Will come the happy twist of a dove, of the breeze, the sweetest of shaken. A woman who leans in will make the rain falling where we throw on our knee, on our knees. I like how that speaks on the idea of how somebody with a gentle spirit, patience and determination can really move mountains once they choose to do so. So beautifully written and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. It almost reminds me of in its construction. And the way it approaches the subject matter, it almost reminds me of Tennyson and the Lady of Shalott. And it talks about...
Oh, that's a great observation.
And in the length of it, in the storytelling, it touches on the environment. It touches on her feelings. It touches on spirituality. The Lady of Shalott, to me, is a very ethereal. It's of this plane and not of this plane, and that's the feeling I get from Fabrice's piece. Is very much like the Lady of Shalott. So I really enjoyed it. I'm going to go back and reread it. I know several times, and so we are very lucky to have a SoundCloud from Frank. So if you would you treat us to that SoundCloud?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do you have the poem posted?
I will post it right now. I am, even as we speak, the electrons are zipping across the page here, and they're not cooperating. Come on, electrons. Okay, there we go. And, oh, shoot. I see what I've done. There we go. Okay. I try to keep the inbox open and not open things in it. And sometimes I'm not successful with that. There we go.
All right. Well, we have The Cause of the Crows by Poetic Picasso. And as you said, he was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud.
Yeah.
So here we go.
Evening, she hears once more the restless crows resonate, an ominous token of the scented human, of the malediction of a family's dark secrets. When the flapping wings stir the howling winds of death, the hour suddenly befalls the rafter of the awakened shadows of time. From the forlorn graveyard beyond the Eldritch field of buried bones. The silence of the morning solitude is interrupted by the regrets of the past. A haunting path daunted with the clamour of harrowing cries of perished souls. Trapped forever in the calidonous world of the sins of blasphemy. Her pale skin and brunious hair bear the semblance of a tormenting guilt. The stains of blood are impressed in the footprints of her evil deeds. Disguised by the black long dress she wears to remember her doomed widow. the night to bear witness to the macabre scene of ineffable screams. The continuous night of her agony and unyielding madness are tufted. The calls of the crows are heard throughout the listless hammocks. The kinsfolk dare not to saunter no wind upon the solitary road of no return. For they know and are aware of the family curse of the Middletons. The legend evokes vile terror of the witches and warlocks of Lucifer. Listen to the wind.
He had entirely too much fun with that. Oh, Frank, you've been channeling Poe again. This is wonderful. Great storytelling. Wonderful visual imagery. I tucked this one away and trotted out again in another 10 months when Halloween rolls around. This is wonderful. During the evening, she hears once more the restless cause resonate, an ominous token of the centurial omen of the malediction of the family's dark secrets. Great opening. And the storytelling starts from there. It's just great. And it's the image that several people visited Faziana. That had one passage that talked about eggnog-colored sky. It was the figure of the woman with the crows flying around, and he's focused the entire piece on that and really woven quite the story around it, quite complex and quite engaging. What did you think, Pam?
Oh, my goodness. Well, first of all, that performance there with the background music and the sounds of the crows and his Vincent Price reading voice and the wicked laugh at the end, it was just wonderful to listen to. But this is a beautiful and epic dark rite. I like how, first of all, he uses the crows as almost like a backdrop, messengers of death throughout the poem, leading us to the true evil. It's not the crows that are the evil. It is they announce it. That comes through with the idea of Lucifer at the end. I really like the ending, and I also especially like disguised by the long dress she wears to remember her doomed widow, the night shall bear witness to the macabre scene of ineffable screams, the continuous night of her agony and unyielding madness attested. Isn't it always interesting? Like, if you look at common ghost tales or creature mythological creatures that are really scary and violent, how many of them are women? It's just fascinating that there's oftentimes it seems like the women ghosts are the saddest and the angriest, and they have so much that they lash out about. You know, that's probably from holding it all in while they were alive. That's what that is. I'm just saying.
I remember in the original Star Trek, there was one episode that was sort of a, it took the theme of Jack the Ripper, and it took the Jack the Ripper and took the notion that Jack the Ripper was a life form, a life force that could travel from planet to planet. And it was on Earth and murdering, mass murdering women. And then when humans were able to travel off planet and reach out into space, it traveled with them, and it traveled, and they were trying to track where this thing had been, and the one character says, well, why women? And Spock says, because of the species, the terror, the emotions of women were much stronger, more intense. And if this entity is, if it's feeding off of emotional intensity, and certainly it's going to prey upon women more than men. And so I thought that was an interesting character development. But you're right, you know. But if you look at in nature too, your hunters, your hunters, your very good hunters are women. Are they females? They're the females. And if you want to really make a guy feel bad, tell him that the women, the female of the species, throughout nature, do the choosing. And if they disagree with you, then ask them, then why is it all the male birds have all the fancy plumage?
Because
the female birds do the choosing.
But that is funny. But yeah, I really enjoy this Right by Frank. You know, I can't remember the name of it. I'll have to look it up. But there's this one kind of bird. I have to look it up and send you the link. That the mating pairs, and they mate for life, will sing in like harmony with each other, unless a single female comes near the male, then his mate will start singing over him to drown him out, to make sure the other female bird knows that he's already claimed.
Isn't that amazing what nature, and there's so many instances of that in nature, of mating rituals and mating dances and shows of plumage and what have you. Well, we're down to 7 minutes, and luckily Hats wrote to me and said that she had written a piece that was inspired by this particular artist. So I have put it up, and it's Faded. It's called Faded by Hats, and I will read this. And it is definitely this artist. And the piece goes like this. So he left. I was left alone in this house. She, the other one, has hips and breasts and can offer him a cup of laughter. She did not complete an idolatry to create. She did not compete in idolatry to create a home, yet she won. He walked away. He didn't wipe out the foam on the sink in the bathroom. He left the toothpaste open, and he forgot to turn off the lamp. The windows crackle in the wind. Blind solitude hits the walls. The house tight now. The heart whimpered, and from the depths of the chest fell all those fake years. Stuck chips or building a terrace, callus on fingers, clay behind the nails where planting flowers, snoring into the night. 1,000 times scrubbed flooring, washed shorts, iron shirts, clinked pots, mixed sauces, served dinners. It's all blown away, all of them, hopes, desires, passions, promises. And her author's note is a poem written, inspired by Andrea Coach, an artist I've recently discovered for myself, and found her art to be extremely inspiring. Her paintings tell allegorical stories that are rich in emotion and symbolism. I quite concur. I quite agree with her. And this is actually a picture that isn't part of one of the prompts. It's interesting. It's another young ginger-haired girl, arms crossed in front of her, wearing a white lace blouse, and she's leaning against some whitewashed boards near a window opening, and you can see the seagulls flying around outside, and she's looking down. This very soft, like she's like everything's just ended, everything's lost. So I'm glad that Hats dashed up a little note to me earlier in the week, and I invited her to send it to the contest today, but she missed it. But that's all right, because at least we read it for her this evening. And thank you, Hats, for that contribution and for a very a serious piece of poetry. What did you think of this?
You know, I really liked and admired this piece. A great take on the artwork. The artwork is fascinating to me, how there's always something going on in the background, and oftentimes the main subjects of the art seem almost unaware of it. Like here, for example, the woman seems very lost within her own pain rather than the panic of the birds and the tornado. I can see why this poem won 2 golds and a silver in 3 different contests. I'm glad that Hats shared it with you. Wonderful, powerful imagery and metaphors throughout. This really speaks on the idea of lost love, of lost hopes and dreams, and the betrayal. And I like how there's a very almost old-fashioned 1930s look to the artwork, and
yes,
yet it's kind of brought into modern times, into this poem, especially with lines like, he walked away, he didn't wipe out the foam on the sink in the bathroom, he left the toothpaste open, and he forgot to turn off the lamp. All she needed there was a line about him forgetting to put the damn toilet seat down, and it would have been perfect. It is definitely an amazing write.
It would have passed a little romance away.
Yeah, right.
Well, Pam,
great show tonight, Bobby.
Well, thank you very, very much for being there for me. You're always there, you know, for all of us. You're always there when we need you. And I can't thank you enough for being so giving and generous with your time and your person. It's a very loving thing for you to do, and I really appreciate it. I want to talk about the next contest that I've just about got finished up, and I have to do a shout out, because the next contest I'm going to credit one of our writers, if I can ever find the damn name, Amy. A.R. Mundell sent me about 2 weeks ago a text and said, I just discovered this artist, and I think you might like him. And so I'm sending him along, and she was absolutely right. And so I'm going to the next contest is coming up. People will be they'll be dumbfounded. They'll be shocked, because there'll only be 30 prompts.
Oh, my God. I'm shocked and dumbfounded already, just hearing that.
Well, you know, don't get used to it. But this artist, his name is Andrew Scott, which unfortunately is a very common name, because trying to gather information on this, there's a whole platoon of Andrew Scotts out there doing different things. Some of them are sculpting, but this is an illustrator, and he is very imaginative. And these are all very simple illustrations that are very inspirational in the way they've approached things. They're sketches, very much like Escher in the style of just being pencil drawings with a very little color to them, but a lot of subject matter. And I think people have a lot of fun playing with them. And I will save the really weird shit for the next contest. So anyway, next contest coming up is Scott, Andrew Scott, and that should be posted probably tomorrow. And again, thank you so much for your time. And thank you to everyone that was out on the board and following along with us. And thank you to Zucker, even though he just kind of fell off the planet there. But we had him for a little bit. And I will see you, all you fine folks, same bat time, same bat channel in 2 weeks.